Yeah, talking about eufy.com. The Eufy video lock is unbelievable. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Best Buy stores starting on May 20th. What is it? It's a smart lock, 2K cam, and doorbell, 3-in-1, triple security, so you can have everything you need in one device rather than install many pieces on your front door. It's not just for security, but also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys like my wife. You can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated camera. It's easy to install and set up with just a Phillips head screwdriver, no drilling required. It's got a keyless entry. No more fumbling for the keys. When hands are full, never worry about kids losing keys or passing among the renters of your house. You got a rental property out there, this is a must-have. I love this product. Just got it a couple weeks ago. Huge fan. Have the Ring camera. It's okay. It's not as great as this, so I swapped it out. Go to Eufy Video Lock today on YouTube. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit EUFYOfficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Life on the front lines requires you to step up your game. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax has designed just the right supplements for you and is offering Drinking Bros an exclusive offer. Buy one, get one free on your first order. Go to CardoMax.com and use the promo code DB. That's CardoMax.com. Helping you achieve your max.
Yeah.
Costco didn't pay us for this. Get out of here. I'm like Cristiano Ronaldo right now. Coke isn't sitting up on the fucking table. Get out of here. Just
kidding. Welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. If you're watching on YouTube, Dan violently ripped off the labeling from the Costco.
That was less water about bottle. Costco and more about me not being coordinated enough to rip off the fucking label. And I wasn't even doing it for any reason. I just saw it and wanted to rip it off and fuck around with it. And then I got mad and rage ripped.
So well, it happens.
Now I can't even play with the plastic, which is my intent in the first place. My rage has gotten the better of me already today.
Well, it's good because, you know, look, we've got a guy who can help you with that on the show today.
You think so?
From the arts and science of cultivating influence, we've got John Levy on the show. Is it Levy or Levy? We had a debate. Levy. Like how Jewish are you? How Jewish are you?
Most people call me Levy.
Levy.
They do. Okay. All right. Great.
Because there's Dan Levy and Dan Levy.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
Levy
yes.
is the one that is the MTV guy, and then Levy is Eugene Levy's kid.
Yes.
They're both Canadian, right?
Yeah, both Canadian. Yeah. And I'm awful at pronouncing names.
I
want to
be really clear on this. I am not Canadian.
Are you sure?
I am American.
John, are you sure? Because there is some Canadian vibes to you with what's in the background.
I'm really polite.
Yeah, you're super polite, but also the background. The background is very Canadian right there.
Wait, what is...
That's Colossus from the X-Men.
Yeah. Is it?
That's an original Colossus drawn by Jim Lee.
Oh, that's pretty fucking dope.
That's really dope right there.
Yeah. The only way to really tell somebody's Canadian is to put them in a burlap sack and put a rock, tie a rock to it and throw it in the water. If they float, not Canadian. If they sink, Canadian.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Everybody knows that, though, obviously.
It's basically the same as testing for witchcraft. You can also cut them in half and count the rings.
Yeah.
I think maple syrup comes out if it's a Canadian.
Yeah, yeah. But John, you're definitely not Canadian. You are a behavioral scientist.
Correct, yes.
How's our behavior?
You're batting 1,000.
How's our behavior today? Probably...
What I'd expect from Drunken Brothers.
Well, it's Drinking Bros, but I think Drunken Brothers might be.
I like it.
Yeah, Drunken Brothers is like that's the post show. That's the post show is Drunken Brothers.
How did you get into to being a behavioral scientist? I'm always curious when somebody picks a job that is a little off the beaten path where you're like, why did you do this?
I grew up so unpopular. Like literally nobody wanted to be my friend, that eventually I figured if I could understand how people behave, maybe I could make some friends. And that's like the real explanation. That's not like some rewritten history. In eighth grade, my school teacher decided what she's going to do is let all of us secretly submit two people we want to sit with and two people we don't want to sit with, and they'd rearrange the seating chart. I found out two things. One, there was one kid nobody wanted to sit with, and the second was, that was me.
Oh my God, dude. Did it leak? Did it leak to you?
Essentially, yeah. It was like this whole complex thing, but yeah, it kind of leaked. And I was so devastated. And I was like, I need to figure this out. And so I tried all these things to become popular, and I failed. I like watched the shows that they watched and tried to talk about the things that they talked about. And I hated like Beverly Hills 90210 and all those other things that they enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I was just not into it. And eventually, like, I made some friends as I got older.
Yeah. But
I ended up going into the sciences. And
really, when you say you ended up going into the sciences, where did your academic career begin?
I was in college. I studied computer science, math, and economics. Mm-hmm. And so I majored in not dating.
Yeah, because you actually have to study for those. You actually have to show up. Classes. Yeah, you got to show up for those. What school did you go to?
NYU.
Mm. Oh, shit. Yeah, I know a little something about that. I went there as well. So.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
When did you graduate?
Shit. Not to date myself, it was probably, what, 2014, Dan?
No.
Somewhere in the...
Maybe 2002, probably.
So we were the same year.
No, we were close. I'm probably a couple summers older than you. That's all I'm going to say. But I was at Tisch up there, and it's a wild experience. Now that you say you went to NYU, all right, now breaking this down, throwing somebody like you, who wasn't that popular growing up in high school and all that other stuff, into New York City, shit, man, because your classes aren't close to the dorms at all. No. Like, I mean... Oh, yeah, no. It's a hike, dude.
It's also one of those, like, if you're in the hard sciences, they expect you to show up every day.
Yes. Yes. Right?
And which kind of sucks, because I didn't show up to any of my fucking classes.
I've got to be honest here. I had like the first versions of Photoshop, and I made doctor's notes that looked like the notes from the health, like the, what is student services. Mm. And so they were convinced I had mono for a year.
Oh yeah.
And just showed up for the final.
That's the way to do it. I mean, I didn't show up to any of my classes ever. And I got out with a 397, 4 degrees deep with a master's. That whole going to class thing is pointless.
Yeah, I agree. If you can read the text and cause I was the same way. I went to Ohio State for undergrad. And once I was there, I was like, all right, cool. I figured out the system. Mm. Same thing. Like, I would read the books and then just go in and take the tests and then the finals. Yeah. And I was out. NYU was different because you had to be there in person every day. The only thing that I refused to show up for was the history of cause I did film, and acting and,
the history of film,
the history
like,
of film.
You just, you watch movies.
Yes.
That's it.
Yep.
Like that's literally. It. And then you write synopses on the movies.
Yeah. And so our teacher,
well, you have groups though. If mm-hmm. you do that, you have to show up for the groups probably.
But with Netflix though, you could just do that from home.
Right. You can do it from with Zoom and Netflix. You don't have to fucking leave your house at this point.
Correct. But it didn't exist at the time. Again, a couple summers younger than you. Are older either way. Nobody's counting anymore. But so you had to go. You had to sit there and physically watch this movie in the class, and then give.
Notes. Oh, they did it in the class.
In the class, and then the professor would tell you like why they made it in the shades of moodiness and all that other bullshit.
I mean, that part's kind of cool, but the problem is those classes are like 8 and 11 a.m. and my brain's not awake at that point.
No,
like
no,
to watch a fucking movie, your no. brain, your entire life, you are programmed to watch movies from 6 p.m. until midnight.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you have to go in and do your academic research in the morning. It doesn't make any. And you're in college too, in New York fucking city. It doesn't make any sense.
I remember I was dumb enough to sign up for intense calc, which is like 3 semesters into. At 8 a.m. and the beginning of every sentence would look perfect. And as I would write, it would just scribble all the way to the corner of like, I couldn't stay awake for a sentence.
Yeah.
I'm no sure.
It was miserable.
So how did a guy like you come out of that situation with no friends and all that stuff and then just get vaulted into the middle of New York City? That had to have been a major culture.
So I grew up in New York.
Oh, you did. Thank God. Yeah. All right.
So what ended up happening was I tried to work for a startup, the startup failed. And then I was taking a kind of crazy personal development program. And the guy said something that completely changed my life. He said that the fundamental element that defines the quality of our lives are the people we surround ourselves with and the conversations that we have with them. And I was at the time super heavily in debt from NYU. I was overweight, I was single, like, you know, the picture of like not living up to your potential. And I said, let's see if this guy is actually correct. And I looked up some research and came across a study by these two guys, Christakis and Fowler. And they were looking at the obesity epidemic. They were curious, does obesity spread from person to person like a cold? Or is it a percentage of the population?
Right.
Like Alzheimer's. And what they found was startling. If you have a friend who's obese, your chances increase by 45%. Your friends who do not know them have a 20% increased chance, and their friends have a 5% increased chance.
What's the explanation to that? Like transactive memory or quantum entanglement or some shit, or is it just behavioral?
No, it's much simpler than that. There's a couple explanations. We don't need to quantum entangle anything. There's part of it is, it looks like you guys work out, you might make friends at the gym, so thereby like birds of a feather flock together, right? But then there's a secondary characteristic, which is if I go to eat a meal with somebody who eats a lot, I'm going to order dessert. Or if you go to movies instead of exercising and we're hanging out, I'm going to eat popcorn rather than doing, I know one of you loves CrossFit. So,
yeah, I mean, that sounds to me like a discipline problem, ultimately, because it doesn't matter who I hang out with. I do the same things all the time.
Well, you do, but it's interesting you said that, John, because I thinking about it after you said it, I was like, all right, going to school, you know, in the Midwest is where undergrad was, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of overweight people in the Midwest. I think it's partially because of the weather, but then you see, I've seen friends of mine, now that you brought this up, who were either thinner and then married somebody fatter, or fatter and married somebody, and vice versa. And then they both become equally as fat as time goes on, because just thinking about it now that you're saying it, yes, if you're going to dinner and somebody's ordering Italian and they're ordering all these amazing dishes and they're like, oh, try a bite of this. Over the years, as that goes on, you're going to get fatter. There's no way around it. It is actually the people you surround yourself with.
There is a way around it, though. It's called discipline.
It is. But
I'm with you about like the importance of discipline, but you can tout discipline from here for the next 10 years and it won't cover the gap. It just doesn't. There's something called ego depletion, which is really well documented. And one of the craziest studies, they looked at the probability of getting parole at your parole board hearing, right? So you're in jail, or in prison rather, it's your parole board hearing. What is the greatest predictor of if you get parole or not? And it's not good behavior.
Humility, probably, I would have to guess. I would say probably humility in the when you talk to the parole board.
Race?
I wish it was any of these things. It was, or maybe not race, but it was time of day. If you were first in the morning, you had a 60% chance, and that progressively went down to zero before lunch. And then after lunch, it went up to 60% until the end of the day. And the reason is that as we get tired, we default to our standard answers. And in the case of parole, it's no. And so we're most open-minded when we're most alert. And
so the parole board needs Adderall then.
Yeah. Or the prisoners need it.
Or both.
I think we've just solved the prison problem. Yeah, Adderall for everyone.
Well, either just have a couple of fat lines of cocaine out on the table. Everybody does a line. You pass a mirror around, and then everybody's like, all right, now let's get down to fucking business. Because that's how I conduct all of my meetings.
Yeah, I mean, but you're hearing the same story, though, probably all day. Sir, I found Jesus. I'm sorry for murdering those people. And, you know, like whatever it is, right?
It's some dude with a swastika on his forehead. Like,
man, I'm super sorry.
I'm not racist. Right?
I'm not racist. This is a swastika.
Yeah, this is actually a Celtic symbol.
That was the old me, man. I'm all done with the Nazi shit.
Ego deflation.
It makes sense. So what did you do? What did you do to turn your life around then?
So I ended up saying, all right, being around, and just to add one more thing, it turns out that same characteristic of weight gain, weight loss is also true for happiness, marriage and divorce rates, smoking habits, voting habits. Like study after study has shown this pattern exists. So I said, I need to figure out how to surround myself with the most influential and successful people that I admire in everything I care about. And I spent about a year studying the behavior of influential people. And then I did something completely insane. I invite 12 people at a time to come to my home. They cook dinner together, but there's a catch. They're not allowed to talk about what they do or even give their last name. And when they sit down to eat the meal they just prepared, they play a game to guess what everybody does. And then they find out they're sitting with a Nobel laureate, an 8-time Olympian, a celebrity, and, you know, editor-in-chief of a magazine. And I've hosted over 2,000 people at 227 dinners in 10 cities in 3 countries.
That's dope.
Holy good idea. Shit, that's awesome. Who's been the coolest one? Are you allowed to talk about it?
Oh, yeah. I can definitely. There are a bunch that I just think are brilliant, right? So there's an Olympian who won 8 medals, I think golds in swimming. I mean, like, what a baller. One of my favorites was actually hosting...
Was it Michael Phelps? Yeah, it's got to be Michael Phelps.
Nathan else Adrian? Is.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah.
He's second.
Phelps, I think, has 24 or something.
Yeah,
he's got something crazy. He won 8 at 1 Olympics. So I didn't know if he came over to your house like right after that Olympics.
No, he was smoking weed right after
now.
That
he's like the face of Modelo. It's crazy. If you watch like a basketball game, you see him like in all the ads. There's some amazing comedians like Eliza Schlesinger is awesome. Trevor Noah's brilliant guy. I mean, just super smart. Deepak Chopra, Priyanka Chopra. I mean, like, I've hosted members of royalty, like the everything across the board. Isaiah Thomas is awesome. Mm.
The basketball player?
Yeah.
No shit.
NBA All-Star.
Yeah.
One of my favorite moments, though, since the guests get to guess what everybody else does, is I had the vice president of like originals at Netflix at a dinner a few years back.
Oh, that's dope.
And one of the rules is if you recognize somebody, please tell me. And so that way I don't put you together to cook since you already know each other and you get to meet new people instead. And so she's like, hey, I know that person, Sasha. I almost hired her to run an entire division at Netflix. And I was like, okay, great. You're going to be the last one to guess. And everybody's guessing what Sasha does when we sit down to eat. And she's beautifully dressed, very stylish, pretty young woman. And then the vice president from Netflix says, I almost hired you to run a division. And Sasha goes, no, actually, my full name is Sasha Gray. And what I'm best known for
porn
is adult film.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so it was so funny because the woman from Netflix literally just hid behind her like napkin being like, I just said that I almost hired her to run a division at Netflix.
Well, let's face it. You get a lot more originals coming down the pipeline, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's the drums.
Yeah.
Everybody knows the beat. Come on. Everybody knows it.
Shout out to, but to be fair, she did do a hardcore drama that I believe Netflix ended up picking up. So,
oh, yeah?
Perhaps, Steven Soderbergh directed it. So perhaps... she might have looked at the film.
She was in a movie called The Girlfriend Effect.
Correct, yes. Yeah. That was it. And Steven Soderbergh was the director of that. So maybe she had saw the movie and thought, got her confused with somebody else. Mm-hmm. But now the rest of us would definitely not get her confused with anybody else.
Nobody knew who she was. It was so amazing.
Or people were pretending to not
know. Porn stars in real life look different. All the porn stars we've had on this show... never look anything like what they look like in porn.
Yeah, you don't look anything like what you look like in your porn. So.
Yeah, your porn, you look a lot different. Your beard game is strong.
Yeah, I mean, you're usually wearing a clown mask, though, so it's...
It's also the lighting. I've got better lighting when I'm on set.
And stage makeup is pretty thick.
One of the things that consistently happens is that the celebrities don't get recognized at my events. And it's because once you take people out of context, it's really hard to recognize them.
That's awesome. How did you get a hold of all of these people to even conduct this experiment or try it? I mean, no offense, but as a guy who grew up unpopular, now you're hanging out with the most popular people in the world, and they're at your house cooking for this experiment. How do you even do that?
So the first thing was that the initial guests, right, the first 12, weren't nearly as impressive as the guests are now. I've just been doing this for more than a decade. So... as I kept doing it, eventually people would be like, oh, do you know who you need to meet? This person's the writer for The Daily Show, right? And they have an Emmy. And then as more and more impressive guests came, I could promote the fact that, oh, we have Emmy Award winners and so on and so forth. And so then it turns out that it's really easy to find just about anybody's email address. Mm. And so I hired a team of researchers that just track down people. And Nobel laureates, everybody has their email addresses because they're usually professors, so they're public.
Yeah.
Right? Olympians, let's be honest, most people don't actually ever try to reach out to them.
That's like, true. Yeah.
Right? So they're so flattered when you actually say, hey, it's been, you know, 6 years since the Olympics. We would be honored if you join us. And so most people that you actually want to get in touch with would be super happy to hear from you. It tends to be often the really super high level executives that are tough to get a hold of because they're traveling so much.
Right.
And everybody wants money and internships from that.
Yeah.
And
things like that. It sounds like you had something of like a precursor to what we would now refer to as the intellectual dark web, right? I mean, I guess maybe yours is a little
bit, interesting.
Yours is a little more broadly scoped, whereas the intellectual dark web is scientists, philosophers, some people in standard culture. Like you're thinking Eric and Brett Weinstein, Friedman, Rogan, fucking Ben Shapiro, Sam mm-hmm. Harris, people like that, right? That are on all sorts of sides of the political and social spectrum, but most of whom enjoy conversation and debate, right? Above, I think the intent behind it was to break down barriers and kind of get rid of some of the cancel stuff.
You know I've actually never heard of this before.
Yeah. IDW, Intellectual Dark Web. They do a lot of stuff on Clubhouse, if you're interested.
Oh, that's great. Mm. I'll definitely look it up. It seems like it's exactly my kind of crowd of interesting people. Anyway, so long story short, I did it a few times and it kept getting people coming. And so I said, okay, I'm never going to stop. And it ended up expanding to all like the major cities in the country. And one of the rules we made was that nobody can lead one but me, so that it doesn't ever, you know, like there's TED and there's TEDx.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like they lost their brand a bit. I never wanted that to happen. But it's been kind of wild. Like everything great in my life really comes from it.
That's amazing. Did anyone ever get in any like hardcore arguments at one of these things, or did somebody ever walk out because they were offended by someone? You always wonder when you put so many different groups together, especially now in the times we live in, like politically and things like that, if somebody didn't agree with one another and they would just be like, well, fuck this, I'm out of here.
So it's interesting. There was one time where we had a woman turn to another dinner guest when she found out what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And said, I couldn't like you more as a person, but I couldn't dislike your views of the world more. And he's the editor of The Libertarian. And he was like some, you know, left-wing think tank or whatever it is. But I think that it really goes to show that when you are exposed to the human side of people, like I doubt the three of us would agree on everything in life, right? Mm-hmm. But because we can find some common ground, we can have a functional relationship.
Right.
It's when we separate people into their identities and they have no depth.
That's what the intellectual dark web is all about. It's about a fucking wholesale rejection of identity politics, of intersectionality, of all that nonsense. I mean, you have on the far, far progressive side, Eric Weinstein, who calls himself progressive. Then you have Ben Shapiro, both of whom agree that this intersectionality thing, reducing people down to all of their individual pieces and then tribalizing everything from there, is fucking stupid. And it is. It's the one poison in social behavior that is consistent throughout all of human history, and the one for whatever reason we seem to be moving away from, and then people got afraid and grabbed onto it like it was the fucking like it's sand pouring through our hands, we're trying to grip it. Like, why?
Yeah,
like we were in the last gasp of all that bullshit, and all of a sudden, I mean, you know what it is, it's media and politicians trying to divide people. That's really all it is.
There's this behavioral bias called the frequency illusion. I don't know if you've talked about it before, and you're nodding, so I'm guessing you have.
I know what it is, but we haven't talked about it on the show.
We haven't talked about it on the show, yeah.
So the basic idea is that, you know, when you buy a new car, you suddenly see everybody who's driving that car.
Mm-hmm.
So you think it's really common. That's how the human brain works, which is if you know to look for something, you think it's really common. So people who just got pregnant think everybody's having kids.
Right.
Actually, the CDC just announced that we are not even replacing ourselves at the rate that we're having kids, and there's less children being born than ever. So the frequency illusion is that we think that things that are incredibly rare are quite common because we can think of examples or no examples. And those examples tend to be given to us by the media. So when we see, like, you know, some individual who identifies as a Trump supporter going crazy on people, then, oh, everybody who's a Trump supporter must be completely insane.
It's a monolith.
And it loses all nuance.
Yeah. Monoliths are never correct, ever. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's kind of the point of this country is to, instead of reducing people down to their individual characteristics, reduce people down to their individual actions, which I believe is something along the lines of, let's not judge people by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. Somebody said that at some point.
I think it was Dale Murphy from the Atlanta Braves.
No, it was Dale Earnhardt.
Ah, yeah. R.I.P.
Two Dales.
Senior.
Two Dales. Senior. Both. Anderson. Wait, did Dale Murphy wear 3-2?
Yeah, he did.
Wow. Two guys.
Both named Dale.
Both named Dale. Both from number the South. Three. Yeah. Both from the South.
Both legends.
Both legends, and both believed in that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
In your book, you talk about, you know, all of this. I mean, you've had an unbelievably fascinating life. My producer just told me, and I don't know if this is true, either that or it's an awesome, awesome prank. You had the voice at one of these dinners from Who Let the Dogs Out?
The guy who barked? The barking dog. This guy was ridiculous. He was representing the Baha Men. This is a guy who like discovered all these kind of famous bands and some less famous bands like Hanson. And they were recording, and one of the Baha Men was supposed to do the voice, I think. And he's like, that's not how you do it. You do it like this. And he comes into the recording, barks, and they're like, okay, we're going to use that. And then it ends up winning a Grammy, and he gets to win a Grammy for barking.
No way. So is he part of the Baha Men?
Technically not. His name is Steven Greenberg, and he's like some, you know, really respected music executive and like talent manager over the years, and just a great guy who randomly, you know, this turned into something that became part of his career.
That's really funny.
Holy shit. If I had a Grammy from the Baha Men, Who Let the Dogs Out song, I could probably die at that point. I don't know how much higher you get in this life.
Grammy's a Grammy.
Yes.
At the end of the day.
Yes, a Grammy's a Grammy.
I had a really similar experience. I was ready to die when I hosted my hero at a dinner. Everybody always is like, oh, if you could host anybody, who would it be? My answer was Peter Cullen, and nobody knows who Peter Cullen is. Peter is the voice of Optimus Prime from the Transformers. And so at a dinner, he recorded me in the voice of Optimus saying that I'm officially a part of the Autobots. And at that moment, I was just like, okay, I'm done. I've got nothing left to accomplish.
Peter Cullen is Canadian, though, by the way.
He is Canadian. He
just
is
so
Canadian.
Everybody, just full disclosure.
Just so we're on the up and up. Are you married right now, John?
Yeah.
And what did your wife get to go to any of these dinner parties? And what does she think of all this? Because, I mean, I'm looking at your bio here. You've been to all seven continents. You've gone and seen the coolest things in the world. Does she get to do all of this stuff with you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as long as her work doesn't conflict. We actually met at a airport at the gate. And I essentially said, hey, we were chatting for a few minutes. I said, hey, you have two options right now. You can either take your pre-assigned seat and sit next to some 300-pound man muffin top and over the armrest with terrible BO, or you could switch your seat and sit next to me and have the most amazing flight of your life.
Really?
That was the first time we met.
Where did you come up with the brass for that? You said you weren't cool. Like, that's a ballsy move.
I'd never said anything like that before in my life. We ended up then having a layover. She was going to Moscow. She's Siberian. I was going to Israel, and I said, hey, do you want to grab a drink? And we ordered some drinks. She sat down, and I said, you know what, I'll be right back. And I disappeared. And when I came back, I had a gold bottle of champagne from Duty Free. And we ended up just getting, you know, kind of sloshed and kissing at the airport and planning a date for a month later.
That's great.
So this is the woman that became your that became your wife?
Yeah, you married her.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Interesting.
Anybody that cool? Like, come on. You got to do anything you can to spend time with them.
What a great story. How long you guys been together?
6 years. We met 6 years ago, and we've been married for 3.
Holy shit. What a wild-ass story. Because you always wonder, right? Who are the people? Whenever you see people hitting on each other, like at the airport or in the seats in particular, like, every flight I look for this, every single one. there's always one dude who's sitting next to like a moderately attractive girl or whatever, and he's just throwing his best game out. And usually the rows around that guy end up looking around at each other of like, dude, are you hearing the shit that's coming out of this guy's mouth? There's no fucking way this is going to work, or that you're going to go home with somebody from a flight.
Yeah, it was, I'm not going to say it was my best game, but she's an accepting human being. probably, and you know, this book, the one that just came out, it's called You're Invited.
Yes.
It's like really scientifically researched. It hit the New York Times bestseller list, all that. My previous book called The 2AM Principle is about the science of adventure. And that one, I was just curious if I could get a publisher to pay me money to go and travel and do research on the science of adventure.
This
and
sounds so like
it was kind of a boondoggle, right?
Yeah.
But as I was doing that, I managed to probably do one of the craziest things I ever did. I was leaving Stockholm at about 5 o'clock in the morning with my best friend, Liam. And we were going through duty free and we were picking up a few bottles to take to the next city where we were meeting up with my family. And the woman behind the duty free counter says, ticket please. And I pass it to her and she goes, oh, Israel. And I was like, I was, you know, it was 5 o'clock in the morning. I was drunk. I'd come straight from a night out. And I said, yeah, do you want to come? And she goes, yeah. And I go, great, then come. And she says, well, I'm a grad student. It would be really expensive. And I'm like I said, drunk. So I'm like, what if I paid for your trip? And she goes, okay. And so I pull up my phone and I start searching for flights, which causes an entire backlog in people at duty free. So now the other lines are looking over, trying to understand why there's so much noise. And now all of duty free is shut down. And eventually I'm like, hey, when's your break? She says, 25 minutes. I said, meet me at the Heineken bar. 25 minutes later, we started booking her flight, except there was one problem. I didn't even know her name yet.
Oh my God.
So I couldn't even fill out the ticket. Eventually we figured it all out, bought her a ticket, and 24 hours later, she had joined me and my family. This is years before I met my wife.
Yeah.
And she traveled with us for a week and ended up becoming like a really close family friend.
No shit. I mean, you guys hooked up, obviously, right?
I'm going to refrain from answering that question.
It's a yes.
That is if you can get a girl to leave the duty-free shop, yeah, you're definitely hooking up. I mean, that's pretty incredible of like, hey, do you want to leave these fucking dirty idiots behind and then travel the world with me and I'll pay for your flight right now? Yes, 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 I do. I would have done it. And I'm not even, well, mildly gay, I guess, but, you know.
What I've learned from my experiences is that there's like either the people who accept that kind of invitation are either the coolest people you will ever meet in your life, or they are so crazy you have to be careful. Mm. And there's very little in between. Like it's, and I was fortunate that in both the story of my wife and this story that's in the book about duty free, they ended up being really cool. But there's definitely been stories where people have just been completely insane.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, with your book, You're Invited. I'm sure you get this question all the time, but I'll ask it because everybody has their dream dinner party, dead or alive. Who is your dream dinner party of four?
Oh wow. Okay. Stan Lee, I never got to host him while he was alive.
Have you ever met him? Have you ever met Stan Lee?
No, I never met Stan. And it's super frustrating because I've hosted like all the people who helped the Marvel universe come to life.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like, and I never got to host, Stan. I would really love to meet like my great grandfather. I'm mixed race. My grandfather on that side would be from Yemen. And I know nothing about them because there isn't like much
coffee.
I'm sorry.
That's where coffee comes from. Yemen. Originally, the first coffee beans were discovered by Yemeni farmers. Their goats ate some plant and made them freak out. And that's the story of Yemen.
I thought it was. Anyway,
it was Yemen.
And then, I mean, like, you know, I'd be happy to hang out with any of the classics that people have. Always pick.
Right? Like Evel Knievel for sure.
Yeah, right? Obviously. Dale Earnhardt, who we mentioned Dale earlier. Earnhardt,
obviously.
Yeah.
Who could say no to them?
I mean, yeah.
How about you guys? Somebody that you've never had on the show that you'd love to have?
Maybe
I could just send an email.
Absolutely. So I'll say this. I've met Stan Lee. Uh-huh. I auditioned for him for this one of the Marvel things years ago. The greatest guy ever, the nicest man. He feels like your grandfather, and was unbelievably gracious and humbled by the world. And he was super grateful to like all the fans and all that stuff. And he is what you thought he was. So I hope that helps at least. But as far as my dream, it's two of them are in the same group. So it's Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. I'm a huge Rolling Stones fan. One of my son's names is Jagger. I'd like to have dinner with those two guys. And then the other two, you're not going to know who Ricky Henderson is, I'm imagining, right?
The name sounds so familiar.
He's a baseball player. One of the greatest of all. He's the greatest at speaking in the third person of all time, which I really, really enjoy. But he was my favorite player as a kid.
John really appreciates that about people.
Yeah, yeah. Try it out. Like at the next dinner party you host, just only refer to yourself in the third person. I know. It's the look you get. Because Ross likes it a lot as well. He finds it very, very fascinating. And then I think for the fourth one, it would be Trump. But Trump now, like today. I want to see what it was really like for him during those 4 years, what, you know, expectations, everything else happened, and then what has happened since. I find him to be a fascinating figure, mostly because we knew literally everything about his life, and then it just got shut off, you know, social media wise and everything. So I'd be curious to know. Because I think he would tell you. I think that's one guy who would tell you behind the scenes of like, all right, here's how it went. You know, aliens, all the other stuff that you find out as president and everything else. I think he would actually tell you that at a dinner.
I think that he would have told us if there were aliens.
He did have something written into that CDC or that COVID bill where they were going to release something about the aliens. There's always weird shit in these bills that come out where you're just like,
oh yeah, you can sneak them in. There's a stage where you don't have to say who did it.
And you're like, who did this? And it was Trump for the alien thing. And like, you know, they've been slowly releasing some of it, but a lot of it's been redacted, so you don't know.
There's also a big difference between an unidentified object and alien, right?
Like yes.
That's like an important.
Yeah.
So I've actually hosted Marla a few times. Maples, his ex-wife.
Oh, Marla Maples.
She's delightful. And Tiffany used to come to my events with Secret Service, which was always really amusing.
Oh, no shit. Tiffany Trump, the daughter you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She never came to a dinner because she's still in school and all that. So we there's like a committee that picks who gets to come to the dinners.
Hmm. Yeah.
So you have to like get to a certain point in your career to be invited.
Oh, that's cool. Dan, I think yours would probably be scientists, right?
A couple of them would, for sure. I would like to talk to Carl Sagan, because science-wise, he's certainly my hero. But I'd also like to talk to Jonas Salk, who developed the polio vaccine and
gave it away,
Yeah, he gave it to the federal government for the cost of his lab fees instead of, you know, profiting billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Like these cunts do today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Profiting off of people's misery. Galileo, just because he made leaps in science without like any support at all. It was all inside of his own head. And he faced a significant amount of persecution for it, exile even. And then the last one would be Octavian, who Julius Caesar's great nephew, who became Augustus Caesar.
Okay.
Because I think he's probably one of the better leaders in human history.
So that's where we're at as people. Couldn't be any more different. But that's the beauty of what you do, is like you're getting all of these crazy people from everywhere and doing it. And they're all detailed in your book. You're invited. Trevor Noah, when you said that at the top of the show, he's so famous. Didn't everyone know him once he was there at dinner?
So it's interesting. I think two of the guests recognized him.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that he went, the moment you go by your middle name, then people don't recognize you. It's kind of this funny thing. Deepak Chopra went by his middle name, and one person said, I thought that was Deepak, I just didn't want to seem racist by thinking like all Indian people look the same. So there's this kind of funny reaction that occurs that probably maybe in passing people think something, but they don't want to seem presumptive. But no, there were definitely people who are like, oh, I had no idea. That totally caught me off guard. And that we've hosted a lot of people who are, you know, super familiar, but nobody knows why. Malcolm Gladwell came one time.
Yeah. Oh, he's been on the show. He's fantastic. Mm-hmm. My God, I could talk to him for like 5 hours. Yeah. He's a brilliant guy. There was an old TV show back in the day on IFC or Sundance Channel. It was called
Dinner
for Five with Jon Favreau. And I was a huge fan of that show, but you knew the people, you know, which totally dilutes the experience. What you're doing, though, is like the most fascinating shit of all time, because then everybody's on the same playing field. And you're right. You would leave with different reactions after chatting with somebody versus if you actually knew who they are and what their beliefs are and everything.
Yeah, I think one of the most important factors is that we built it on behavioral science. And this is what I really dive into in the book, is that there's a fundamental misunderstanding of what causes us to connect and build trust. And so people think that, okay, if I want you two to trust me, what I should do is win you over with an expensive dinner or with gifts and things like that.
Drugs for Dan, obviously. Like, if you gave drugs to Dan, he'd be your best friend
forever.
He
said it's a requirement for every meeting. You can never have enough.
I use the dentist system, personally. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the dentist system.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
What's the dentist system?
It's from
Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yeah, it's from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's about how he hooks up with women. The first thing you do is demonstrate value. Then engage physically, meaning to have sex with her, then nurture dependence, which is to pretend to be an angry neighbor and threaten her life, and then you show up to help her, and then you neglect emotionally, and then you inspire hope, and then you separate entirely. It's fucking stupid.
An inspiration to us all.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Definitely the behavior of a sociopath.
So it turns out what actually works is something called the IKEA effect. And that essentially says that we care about our IKEA furniture more because it's a pain in the ass to assemble it.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
Anything we put effort into, we actually care about more, which is why at my dinners, the guests cook dinner together, because it's through that shared effort that they actually feel connected to one another.
I had a relationship end from an IKEA experience, and that's no lie.
You got into an argument from walking through the endless hours of IKEA flooring.
John, you've been on podcasts before. We got some sponsors who pay for this show to be on the air, shockingly. First and foremost is ghostbed.com/drinkin'bros. Drinkin' Bros, get an exclusive offer here. When you use the code Drinkin' Bros at checkouts here, you get 30% off site-wide, 30% off all mattresses. And then you get two free luxury pillows with it. The best hybrid right now, if you're going for it, is that Ghost Bed Flex. They've got the classic, the Classico, which is nice, but they got the Ghost Lux, the Ghost Bed 3D Matrix, and their sheets are super underrated, by the way. And when you're on the website, you can go to the bundles, you can go to the bedding. If you just want accessories, you can get that. And they have this free, like, kind of running calculator that goes at the bottom with it. So what it is essentially is there's a 36-month pay-as-you-go, no-interest program that's always on GhostBed, and then there's a running calculator to see how much money it would be with all the stuff in your cart monthly if you were going to get a payment program. Now, with that, obviously, you have to have decent credits, you know. Can't be in the toilets, but just decent credit will get you all those deals as far as the pay-as-you-go no-interest program. And then they've got the 4th of July sale that's starting in about 7.5 hours as well. So check back to ghostbed.com/drinkin'bros today for that one. Next up, we got cardomax.com, helping you achieve your max. This is Sean Mattson's company. Obviously, friend of the show, former Navy SEAL, great fucking dude. This energy, Joyce, is off the charts, dude. They got a BOGO deal right now. BOGO! Buy one, get one free. And inside each bag of Cardomax, you're looking at, man, 15 in here? So you're getting, it's not just one that you're getting for free. You're getting another bag of 15 packets for free. This energy intensifier is the jam. That's what I use in the afternoon and for the workouts. Pink lemonade and the blue raspberry. Those are my two favorites. So if you're going for the BOGO option, get that. That way you can try each flavor. And you get 15 of these little fuckers. It's just a little plastic pouch. You just rip it open. You can squeeze that into any liquid available or just take it straight to the dome if you want to. I don't know if you're doing deadlifts that day, but if you are, congratulations. Go to CardoMax.com, CardoMax.com, promo code DB. We'll get you that buy one, get one at CardoMax.com. Promo code DB is a buy one, get one free. Well, yeah, so you go through the entire store, which is a fuck all. I was living in L.A., which is a fuck all anyways, and you're just like, oh, my God, I hate being here. I hate being here. Then you got to lug this thing out. Putting it together is obviously 9 hours. I'm terrible at anything, like, handy-wise. So once we had started putting this thing together, I was convinced that it was missing pieces. She was not, and then it turns out that it was. And finally, at the end of it, like, I'm yelling at her, she's yelling at me, and I was just like, stop being fucking poor. I offered to pay for a table that was put together. We could just throw it in the back of the truck and then live our lives. Instead, we wasted an entire Sunday. It was 9 fucking hours of doing this dumb shit. I was like, we will never, ever see eye to eye in this world. If you, because she was like, oh, it's fun. This is, we're having, no, none of it was fun. It ruined a Sunday and ruined a relationship. So if you're out there now, you fucking deserve that. And there's nothing I'm going to.
Well, you can't ruin a good relationship anyways, so that's fine. I mean, that's a good it's a good test. People want to go on dates, like dinner in a loud fucking restaurant and in a movie where you can't talk and get to know each other. That's always been dumb to me.
Yeah.
Like, go grocery shopping together.
Yeah. When you're forced to live with somebody, though, yeah. Like this pandemic, I think, we talked about this on another show called Recycling, which is what a lot of people are doing now, is they're going back to old ex-girlfriends and boyfriends now that the pandemic is over. Because the people that they were stuck with during the pandemic, you realize, oh, shit, I didn't like these people that much anyways, and then they were pining over old relationships, and a lot of these people are getting back together. Behavioral science-wise, what's the method behind that?
So I can share a few things about dating. Me and my lab partner, Moran Cerf, who's a neuroscientist, did what's probably the largest study in history on dating.
Okay.
And we found some weird things. So, for example, across the board, opposites do not attract at all. In fact, the more similar you are, the more likely you are to date, down to your initials. You're 11.3% more likely to date if you have the same initials. It's also why people named Dennis are more likely to become dentists and live in Denver. And after Katrina, there were more girls named with K-A names like Katie and Catherine, because it's so familiar to us that it seems more appealing. So there's this concept sometimes referred to as the mirror exposure effect.
Mm-hmm.
I tell the story of how the most famous painting in the world became the most famous painting in the world. And that's because in 1911, a guy walked into the Louvre, found the smallest painting he could in the Renaissance section, ripped it off the wall, and left. And in 48 hours later, people realized it was missing and printed up all these photos of it. And the story went viral around the world. And that's the only reason you know the Mona Lisa.
No shit. I didn't know
it
that.
It was not considered a good painting.
Huh.
It was like an obscure painting off to the side. But because all the newspapers covered it, more of the people in the world had seen it than any other painting. And then when it was returned, hundreds, I think, of thousands of people had stood in line to just see the empty spot on the wall in the 3 years it was missing.
Wow. Makes sense. I mean, that translates into a lot of stuff in media, politics. Like when that New York Post article ran about Hunter Biden's laptop and mm-hmm. Twitter and Facebook banned it, it got four times more media coverage than it would have if they had just ignored it entirely.
Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or name recognition in politics is the most important thing.
Correct. Yeah.
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 For sure. I mean, people are more comfortable voting for somebody they know that's bad than somebody they don't know that's good.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is fucking stupid, but it is what it is, right?
It's called the mirror exposure effect. And in general, things that are familiar, we tend to like and feel safer about. And so my hunch is, I didn't know this, that people are going back to a lot of their exes pre-pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But it probably feels safe and familiar, and they've been exposed to it a lot, rather than just like voting for somebody unknown versus a name that's terrible.
Got it. Got it. Yeah. Cause we were talking about it and it was just like, you know, and celebrities too, like, you know, Ben Affleck went back to Jennifer Lopez and a lot of these celebrities are going back to their old partners, A-Rod and those guys.
I'm so not in the gossip.
Yeah. Place. Well, you are now. Cause I'm a little queen. I'm a little gossip queen. I'll come to your dinner and tell everybody about Bennifer. But yeah, they got back together and all these other people have like celebrity wise and everything. The weirdest one was Angelina Jolie went back to like her original ex-husband, this guy named
Johnny Lee Miller from, yes. from Hackers
yes.
and from,
yes.
What's the name of the CBS show, where he played Sherlock Holmes in a modern
song? Oh, that's right.
Was it just called Holmes?
No.
Elementary.
Yeah, actually a pretty decent show. It's yeah.
Yeah, so she went back there. They've got pictures of her leaving the apartment for the last, you know.
I mean, they dated when she was now. Before she was married to yes. or she was married to him before Bobby or what
Billy Bob Thornton.
Billy Bob Thornton, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was they were married in like the 90s and so they're back together.
He was also in Trainspotting, by the way.
Yes.
Very
he's
good.
A great oh, he's a great actor. Yeah. yeah. He's a great actor.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's happening a lot, and then you're seeing like I'm seeing with friends and all that other stuff, and yeah, now that you're talking about it, like obviously it makes sense. God, a guy like you, you've done so much here; it's crazy. Out of the seven continents you've been to, what was Antarctica like?
Oh, loved it! Like it doesn't even make any sense. You're used to seeing like these beautiful vistas and trees,
yeah,
and that just there isn't any. It's just blue ice that's stunning, and then occasionally you see like a walrus or a penguin. And in fact, because I've worked so hard this year, me and my wife are going to go there in December back because I loved it so much. It's
perfect.
Like nothing.
Where? Yeah. Where does one even stay? Like, is there a Airbnb there, or is there?
I think there might be like literally one, but it's what you do is you mostly leave from the southern tip of. South America, so Ushuaia, usually in Argentina. It's the southernmost city in the world. You hop a boat, and then you you boat down for, I think it takes like 3 days to get there. And then you're mostly just on the peninsula bouncing around. And if you're lucky, you get to go do a swim, which is, I'm not sure if you've ever done a 0-degree swim with no training, but it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, what happens?
I did 2.5 minutes, which is, I'm going to guess, basically like 10 times longer than anybody else in the group. And you just become an idiot. Like you can't think. And then your body gets so cold that it becomes completely numb. So it feels like you're moving tree trunks for legs when you finally get out of the water. And I forgot to get dressed. And when I realized that I should, which was way too long later, my fingers were so cold that I couldn't hold anything to put my clothing back on.
Holy shit.
And you want to do this again, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
So here's the interesting thing. I hired a level 3 Wim Hof breathing instructor to prep me so I could do 10 minutes this time when I go. No. So this time I'm going to be all ready for the cold.
Why, John? Why do you want to do this?
This is sounding very Into the Wild.
I love it, dude. I love it. Why do you want to do this?
I'm a strong believer that when you're willing to be uncomfortable is when the magic happens in life. And so I always try to find something to do that forces me out of my comfort zone. And when you're like in a, you know, now I'm an adult, I'm married and, you know, have a career. I can't do like the stupid go out with no money, you know, like travel around the world, get into trouble kind of stuff that I used to do.
Yeah.
So I need to find things that are kind of really uncomfortable, but still functional and safe. And I can do without, you know, messing up relationships and things like that.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I don't know why you'd want to do that. I think the coldest, I did one of those polar plunge things on New Year's Day.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
I think, God, what was the water temperature? I think the water temperature was like 40 or 39 degrees or something like that. Mm-hmm. I was so cold. I was sick for like 3 days afterwards. I can't imagine doing 0 degrees for shit, dude. I mean, it took me forever to warm up.
It took me when I did the 2.5 minutes, they rushed me back to the boat and I ran hot water on me and it felt like I was still in an ice shower the entire time.
Wow.
My body was just completely messed up. But when you do Wim Hof, you know, the Iceman, the breathing technique that night, then supposedly it's not such a big deal.
And okay.
Your body's kind of, so we'll see.
Yeah, that's. Is your wife going to do it too? Is she into that?
She's Siberian, so like she grew up with 0 degree plunges. Like it's part of their culture. They go to like the banya, you know, and the like those heated rooms, and then they jump into 0 degree water, and then they go back into the heated rooms. So I don't think she's going to do 10 minutes. I also wouldn't recommend it for her. But yeah, she's going to definitely do it.
That's nuts, dude. That's nuts. So on your first book that you were talking about, the 2 a.m. principle, did somebody fund it? Like, did you get an advance for that?
Yeah, but the advance was terrible. But yes,
yeah.
It was like nowadays, because, you know, this book was like a really serious book, then I got a real advance. But the I got a bit of money that let me travel around for a few months and write, which was amazing. And then those stories kind of, some of them made it into the book, some of them didn't.
You know, it's funny, man. They used to do cool shit like that back in the day. Publishers don't take that risk anymore. If your social media and all that stuff doesn't align with what they want, they won't just give somebody 60 grand advance to be like, all right, you're a great writer. Go and do this crazy fucking, you know, shit, and then come back and write a sweet book about it. Like, they just don't.
They want unicorns, right? It's kind of like tech investing. They'll let 10 books fail if they're, and then, you know, hoping that one will become maybe, you know, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Yes. Yeah. Which that, I mean, I still can't figure that one out. I see it in the airport every single time. It's just an orange cover, and the book is barely like 100 pages or like 150 pages. I ended up reading it because I was just tired of seeing it everywhere. And now that guy has like a series of books of like
Mark Manson. Yeah.
Yes. And they all have like some form of curse word that's beeped out.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a thing, right? And that guy has sold, he's also a former dinner guest. That guy has sold so many copies.
Oh yeah.
It is just nonsensical.
Yeah.
It's him and the Atomic Habits guy, like the James Clearson or whatever his name is.
Yeah. Shit. He gets brought up in all of the meetings when I'm doing book shit. I'm just like, look, man, good luck. Because who he didn't know, I'm sure. Did you ask him at dinner?
If any of those guys knew how good their book would do, they would have negotiated a completely different contract.
Yeah.
They'd have taken like no advance and 50% ownership or something.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, because even Malcolm Gladwell is just like, dude, I'm doing this shit on my own.
Well,
I'm
yeah, not, his I'm last, gonna... so did Altucher. James Altucher self-published his last one, Skip the Line.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he just did it to see if he could do it, but I think in the back of his mind, he probably knew he was going to make a lot more money.
Yeah, with you and You're Invited, I'm assuming you got a pretty decent advance for this, and you're just like, all right, cool.
I got probably an average advance. Truth be told, the first proposal I put out there did not get picked up. I rewrote that proposal 3 or 4 times. I spent months refining it and rewriting it. And I was really lucky. Hollis Heimbach, who leads Harper Business, really believed in the project. And so she kept meeting with me, refining it, and working with me on it until we came up with something that she was super happy with. And if it wasn't for her, I don't think this book would be nearly as good, right? The book I wanted to write was way simpler. And this, I'm super proud of it. It's like a real amazing collection of stories. Only maybe 3% of the book even discusses me or the dinners. It's really about how to apply it into people's lives and the science that's really surprising about human connection.
Yeah, and that's what we always tell people, Dan and I, from this show, and why we love podcasting so much, because we're on every single day. Dan and I do multiple shows. I host another show with my wife called Ross Patterson Revolution. Dan hosts American Party with Medal of Honor recipient Dakota Meyer. And then we all collectively host a sports show together. So we're always talking about different things all day. Dan's is politics. Drinking Bros, we talk to a lot of celebrities and things like that. Ross Patterson Revolution is entertainment. Sports, we talk to a lot of athletes. The reason why I say all this is because we get to meet so many fascinating people every single day. You really can apply just a tiny nugget that you learn from someone to something else in your life to make it a better life. And I can only imagine the advice and all of the knowledge you've picked up throughout the years, having all of these people at your house over for dinner parties. I mean, it's astounding. What's the most shocking thing you learned?
Oh, wow. The most shocking thing I learned? I'll be honest. It wasn't the most shocking thing I learned. Oh, I guess is how many people suffer from imposter syndrome. Like,
oh, yes, dude. I've talked about this with my wife all the time. Yes. Tell everybody what imposter syndrome is.
Every single person that comes to my dinners ends up being like incredibly humble, and the most humble are the Nobel laureates. Mm. They have achieved the greatest recognition that we have in our society, I would argue.
A Fields Medal winner, but only because they only give them out
every four years.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but it's the same thing. Same thing.
But what I'll say about the Nobel laureates is that they know better than everyone that it was a fluke. That they, if they would have just chosen a slightly different topic of research, if they didn't show up on that day where that thing happened in the lab, then that entire field would have never occurred, or that entire discovery. And they end up being really humble, right? Like, occasionally you'll meet one that's just like, I really deserved it, but almost never. and I agree about the Fields Medal. My hunch is a lot fewer mathematicians than there are biologists also. So it's like
There's also a number of different categories for a Nobel Prize as well.
Sure. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's eight in total.
Yeah.
That you can get. So that's one of the things that always surprises me. The other thing is how actors are nothing like what you'd expect them to be, because you're so used to seeing them as their characters.
By the way, for the audience, if you don't know what imposter syndrome is, it's you can't believe that people love you and you're the person that you are. And they feel like an imposter because they don't deserve all the accolades or the press, the money, the fame and everything else.
And somehow all the other people who have the same accolades do deserve it. Just not
them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But everybody feels that way.
God damn it. Yes.
Then the greatest thing that's happened as a byproduct of it is mostly when I encounter a question. So I just had a really bad throat infection. The person who was my primary caretaker or physician throughout it was the former director of the CDC. Right? Like, she found out I was sick. She checked in with me three times a day, reviewed all of the medical material, was like, okay, you probably have this infection, which isn't strep, and so on. Yes, I agree with the medication your doctor is giving you, or whatever it is. But like, literally, that's crazy. I have no right to have my emergency care doctor be the person who ran health for this country, right?
It's pretty rad, though, if you can do it. Why don't you do it and take advantage of it?
Ridiculous. but the scale of imposter syndrome, I'm the least deserving, because of all of the people that have been there at the dinners, up until hitting the New York Times list on this book, I didn't deserve to be at a dinner, right?
I
organized it, which is an achievement, but I didn't have any of the accolades or the awards or the industry respect.
It's
the odd man out.
It's funny too, when you become a New York Times bestselling author and you tell that to people, they're more impressed for some reason. And it's just a whole different level of like, oh, I wrote a book, you know, because everybody has always said that I've written a book. But when you say I'm a New York Times bestselling author, that cachet for whatever reason is impressive, where everybody's like, oh, you must be important. That's awesome.
I will tell you also, having gone through the process, it is so much harder than I thought it would be. So much harder.
Writing a book?
Writing a book is really hard, but getting on the New York Times list.
Yes, and it's curated too. Yeah, it's curated and all that stuff. And you don't know the actual numbers or why they do it. And
I don't think I've ever worked that hard on anything. It was 12 to 16 hour days for promotion for months and months and months.
Yeah, yeah, it's a long time. Yeah, you spend a long time, and you hop on every podcast and all that other stuff. Has anybody gotten too fucked up at one of your dinners that you were like, dude, you got to leave?
We've had, after the dinners, we have these salons where we invite 60 to 100 former dinner guests to come, and they can bring dates. We've definitely had their dates get really drunk. We've done stuff in at Park City in Utah.
Oh, yeah.
And because of the altitude, people got drunk way too easily, and we had people get sick, right? But it was more, I would argue, altitude sickness than it was the alcohol. And we've had We had one person who got super drunk and really paranoid and was convinced that one of the other guests was like out to get them. And it was just so weird because it had never, nothing like that had ever happened before. But when you host 2,000 people, eventually you get crazy stuff. And then one of my favorite moments was we had a well-known British pop artist who has like fluorescent colored hair and all that, came to the same dinner as Dan Kahneman, the Nobel laureate.
Yeah.
And she, nobody knew who either of them were. She sat next to him. And as the big reveals were coming around, she kept holding his hand and like every time she'd find out, like bashing it into the table, being like, oh my God, can you believe that? And this man's like, I don't know, 87 and kind of frail. And we were just super paranoid that he would shatter. But one of my favorite photos to this day is her putting a neon or like whatever it is, colored lipstick mark on his bald head.
Oh,
because
my God.
It's this like photo that doesn't make any sense. Where would this Nobel laureate and this pop artist ever be around each other? And that's kind of what I love about the dinners is that we really make an effort to have people that wouldn't normally be exposed to each other spend time together.
That's amazing. So you've never partied. Kiefer Sutherland's never been to one of your dinners then, right? Because if so.
No. I've partied with him a few times, but no, he's never made it to a dinner.
You got any crazy Kiefer stories?
So most of them, I've three different weird experiences with Kiefer.
Everybody one, does.
My favorite would be, it was a week before Thanksgiving. This was years ago. It must have been like 2013, 2012 or something, maybe 2014. And my brother came to visit me and he made the biggest mistake. He said, oh, John, I'll meet you for one drink, but then I have to go back to my hotel and hop a flight back to California. And I'm like, nobody's ever had one drink and actually gone to their hotel. You've been warned. And so we are, we're walking down the street, a few drinks in, and we're trying to get into a spot. And I see a guy walking into a restaurant with a bar. And I'm like, my brother's name is Amnon. I say, hey, come with me. And he's like, no, we're about to get in. I'm like, just come with me. And we enter this, it's like a restaurant bar and it's closed. And as we're entering, the guy says, hey, sorry, we're closed. And I said, Kiefer, is that you? I haven't seen you since that time we had drinks together at the Spotted Pig. And so the guy kind of waves me in. Kiefer, of course, has no recollection of this because he was so blackout drunk that he had almost fallen down the stairs leaving this restaurant that I met him at. And we sit down at the bar. It's Kiefer's friends, some woman from VH1, Kiefer, myself, and my brother. And then the guy's like, what do you have? I'm like, I'll have what he's having. They pour us a whiskey and a bottle of Coke. And we're drinking, we're chatting. He's being very polite and nice. And then he says, the bartender says, if you're going to be here after hours, you have to partake in our traditions. And he starts pulling something from behind the bar. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be like an all out Coke fest or something. Yeah. This is going to be insanity. And he pulls out something way worse.
Worse Jenga. The game Jenga?
The game Jenga. And so we are now like getting hammered, sloshed, playing Jenga. And things are getting crazier and Kiefer's so drunk he's starting to sign people's bodies and he's got these like Coke bottle thick glasses and you know it's just complete insanity. Like he's losing his clothing as he's playing. We are just so drunk that it's I think at this point 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. My brother has to be awake at the for the airport in 3 hours and we're battling it out. And essentially if we won, Kiefer was inviting us to Thanksgiving dinner with his family the following week.
What?
And we win. And we're like, okay, we're going to go. He gave us the address. But like the entire thing was a haze. And I go home. My brother goes to his hotel room. I wake up. I have no shirt on. I have pants on and shoes on. I'd fallen asleep. Like I couldn't even make it out of my clothing. I was so destroyed. And I look at the floor in the morning and there's something glistening and I realize I had stolen Kiefer's glasses.
Oh, shit.
And so I text him and there's no answer. And I find out who his agent is and I email them and there's no answer. And so there's only one thing to do, which is a week later, Thanksgiving, my brother, the girl I was dating at the time, my brother's wife, and a friend of ours drove to the location, went into this secret floor at a restaurant that's well known, and entered. And he walks up to us, dressed really nicely, very proper. His entire family's there, and is like, "Were you?" And he clearly just didn't remember me at all. Didn't remember my brother. And I pull out his glasses and I was like, "Hey, when you invited us, you accidentally left these with me." And so clearly they were his glasses. And he looks at me and he's like, "Fortunately, I can afford to replace them."
No shit.
And I was like, "Oh my God, I'm so going to get beat up by Jack Bauer. This is ridiculous." And he ends up being like, "Oh, come on," and invites us to join him. And we grab some food. And the food's great, and we're all hanging out, and it's his daughter's. And of course, like, we're now getting sloshed again, whiskey after whiskey. And when the daughter's is like, "Hey, we should play a game," and off the shelf at this restaurant pulls out Jenga, and we're back at it again 1 week later.
No fucking way. So you actually did have Thanksgiving dinner with Kiefer.
Yeah. And his whole family. And his family. Donald wasn't there, but like his, the rest of the family was there. That's the last time I saw him. It was years ago. But that was very consistent with the other experiences I had. He was always cordial until he wasn't.
Yeah. Well, we've told a lot of his stories on our shows before in the past. There's the best one is him jumping through the Christmas tree. You can find it on YouTube. Unprovoked.
Yeah, I remember hearing about this.
Dove through a Christmas tree. And then the one with Klain where they're buck naked. He's buck naked. It's Dimples. Drinking is a really funny photo, but yeah, Kiefer doesn't give a shit, dude. That guy gets rocked, and then it's totally fine the next day. I mean, it's amazing, dude. This conversation has been amazing, by the way. This is the point in the show we get to the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
Oh wow! So I have a super super close friend. His name is Shane Snow. And Shane is one of these incredibly supportive people. He introduced me to my book agent, who, if it wasn't for him, I definitely wouldn't have a book right now. And he's brilliant. He wrote a book called Dream Teams and a book called Smart Cuts that were Wall Street Journal bestsellers, and just an awesome guy who I love dearly.
That's awesome. Who's your agent, by the way?
Jim Levin.
Okay.
I worked with Dan Ariely and Ray Dalio and a bunch of other
just Ray making Dalio. Sure you got to shout him out, you know, because that next book is going to be around the corner. Now that you're a New York Times bestselling author, they're going to want another one.
Ray Dalio is a great author too. Principles by him is one of the better books about business that exists. Mm-hmm. If you haven't read it,
the first half of it's brilliant.
Yeah.
The second half of it's like a how-to manual for creating radical candor companies.
Pretty much, yeah. Radical transparency, I believe, is the phrase he uses very frequently. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Look, man, your book is great. It is out now everywhere. It is a New York Times bestseller. You're invited. John, this was awesome, man. Please come back. After you do the plunge in Antarctica. I want to see if you're alive after 10 minutes.
I'll send you the video.
It's probably going to be
me cursing for 10 minutes straight. I'll send you the video.
Well, the good thing is we can play that on this show. So you're in good company here. For John Levy, D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.